Hello, I'm Fran Kelly, and every day on the Radio National Hour, I take a deep breath and dive in.
If you can have a chip implanted in your brain to help control traumatic memory, then all you have to do is drop the adjective traumatic and it can control memory.
And he said, oh, well, we'll just take your stomach out. And in my head, I was like, how do you live without a stomach?
We're a funny species, Fran. You know, I think we're the only animal who seems to be hell-bent on their own destruction.
So if you want to know how to live without a stomach, or more about David Wenham's ideas for world peace, come find me on the Radio National Hour, right here on ABC Listen.
From Wurundjeri Country, I'm Luke Siddham-Dundon, and on The Breakfast Wrap, from today, universities will be required to define anti-Semitism, Islamophobia and racism towards First Nations Australians, while also setting up clearer processes for racism complaints under new federal standards.
I don't think we should lose sight of how big the step forward is today. Time at uni should be a place where people feel completely safe. For the last 2 years, for a whole lot of students, that just hasn't been true.
You're going to hear from the Home Affairs Minister, Tony Burke, also from the Shadow Education Minister, Julian Lisa. Then, bit of a change of pace. A song made using AI-assisted technology has topped a number of Aussie music charts. You're going to hear from the artists fighting to protect Australia's music industry from artificial intelligence companies who want to change the country's copyright laws. That is coming up. From the Radio National Breakfast team, this is The Breakfast Wrap. Well, this won't be the last time you hear about this story this week, so think of this as a bit of a scene setter. Universities will be required to adopt formal definitions of anti-Semitism, Islamophobia, and racism against Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander peoples under a new standard starting from today. The government isn't instructing universities to use a specific definition in any of the categories. That is despite pressure, including from the anti-Semitism envoy, for universities to adopt a specific and contentious definition of anti-Semitism. This all comes as the Royal Commission into Anti-Semitism and Social Cohesion turns its focus to universities this week. It's going to hear accounts of anti-Semitism on campus from a number of Jewish students. Before we hear from the Home Affairs Minister, let me bring in a bit of the background with our political correspondent, Tom Crowley.
So the context here is that Jason Clare, the Education Minister, is firmly of the view that university governance failed to respond seriously to reports specifically of anti-Semitism from students, some of whom will talk to the Royal Commission this week. That's the motivator for this broader refreshing of governance principles, and in particular, a new requirement to maintain a safe and inclusive environment for students and staff regarding racism. But it also will then require universities to adopt formal definitions of anti-Semitism, Islamophobia, and racism towards Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander peoples. Those are the three that are specified. As you say, this is not new. It was in Anti-Semitism Envoy Gillian Siegel's recommendations. But crucially here, the government is not specifying any particular definition of anti-Semitism that universities must adopt, and so, in a sense, squibbing the question of whether it should be the International Holocaust Remembrance Association's definition, which has been a contentious definition. This came up last week with the ABC and the SBS, which have chosen not to adopt that definition. And the reasoning given, at least by the ABC, is that while that core definition, which, you know, in short, sort of paraphrasing, is a certain perception of Jews which may be expressed as a hatred towards Jews, is consistent with the broadcaster's understanding of anti-Semitism. But a list of various examples that are provided with the definition, some of which reference Israel and criticisms of Israel, including applying, quote, double standards to the country, that the ABC has effectively said that it could be taken to represent an editorial stance. And so it prefers its own definitions and its own line that when criticism about Israel becomes criticism of Jews, that strays into the territory of hate speech. So the ABC is sticking to its own definition on that. I emphasise all of this about the public broadcasters because the same set of questions will be important for universities in deciding what is and is not appropriate to have said at on-campus protests, exactly the same set And some people would have liked the government to be specific, asking universities to adopt this definition, which does, in those examples, list things like likening Israel to Nazis and making Holocaust references of that kind. There would have been some who would have liked the government to be explicit about that. It may be that universities do adopt that IHRA definition, and we'll hear from them this week a little bit as well. But the government, at least in what has been published today, has not been prescriptive in this new standard that applies today.
Tom Crowley there. Later on in the morning, Sally Sara spoke with Tony Burke, the Minister for Home Affairs, as well as the Minister for Immigration and Citizenship, Cybersecurity and the Arts. And she asked him about the government's approach, specifically on the definition of anti-Semitism.
Why hasn't the government directed universities to use a specific definition of anti-Semitism?
I think the important thing is from today, the new announcement says that these are issues they have to confront and have to deal with. I don't think we should lose sight of how big the step forward is today. Time at uni should be a place where people feel completely safe. And clearly, for the last 2 years, for a whole lot of students, that just hasn't been true. It's important that universities are given clear standards and metrics that they're being measured against and that they're measuring themselves against to make sure that the experience of a student in Australia, no matter who you love, no matter where you're from, no matter what you believe, is an experience of safety.
If the university sector needs clear standards, as you're saying, why hasn't the government directed universities to use some kind of specific definition?
Well, I think the principles will be very clear as to what happens here. You know, in terms of anti-Semitism, you want Jewish students to feel safe. And clearly that has not been happening.
The anti-Semitism envoy, Gillian Siegel, who was appointed by you, has advocated for the International Holocaust Remembrance Alliance working definition of anti-Semitism. The PM adopted that definition last year. It cites examples including drawing comparisons of contemporary Israeli policy to that of the Nazis. Does the government expect that universities should prohibit those sorts of comparisons being made by students protesting on campus?
Oh, certainly. I think to ever use someone's trauma and the horrors of a group's past and to use that as a weapon against them, I think is always unacceptable. The comments sometimes made, oh, the IRA doesn't allow you to criticise Israel. We've adopted the IRA definition. I've used it in visa cancellations myself. It's a test where there might be an allegation that there's anti-Semitism involved. You can, within that definition, criticise Israel.
Appearing before the Royal Commission last week, Gillian Siegel said there was, quote, a common and pervasive perception in the Australian Jewish community that coverage by public broadcasters of the conflict in Gaza was, quote, disproportionately gave voice to anti-Israel perspectives. The broadcasters have rejected that suggestion. What do you think?
I'll be upfront. I haven't gone through pressure testing, nor do I think politicians are particularly well placed in pressure testing what they think of media coverage back and forth. We have envoys to be able to fearlessly put forward their view. They are deliberately independent decisions. I'm not critical of Gillian Siegel for using that independence in the way that she has, nor am I critical of the ABC for testing itself against its charter.
Last month, the government revealed an Australian woman who'd been living in Syria and had links to Islamic State had been issued a permit to return to Australia after being subject to a temporary exclusion order. Does the government have any update on that woman? Has she returned?
No, she hasn't. And as I've said a number of times, I wouldn't be surprised if some people choose not to return. I was surprised when all the remainder of the cohort returned, but I think they weren't quite expecting that some of them would be met at the airport by the Australian Federal Police because we already had the evidentiary burden there to be able to press charges. Some further people were arrested a couple of weeks later and charged. I suspect that the particular person who was subject to the temporary exclusion order would be very mindful of what she has done and would be very mindful of consequences if she were to return to Australia. I don't know if she will. My understanding at the moment is, well, it's not for public, but we do know where she is. And
Is she in prison at the moment?
We do know where she is. Information I get from the agencies, you'll appreciate, there's a lot that I get in Home Affairs. It's not for interviews.
The ABC has reported detailed allegations that Hodan Abbey abused a Yazidi girl who was enslaved in her home for several months in 2016. Can you confirm whether you're aware of those allegations, including that Hodan Abbey acted as a Sharia judge or enforcer of Sharia law?
There is a reason why one person stood out from others in terms of the temporary exclusion order information. Not everyone in the cohort was identical. They all made the first decision, which was horrific. They behaved differently when they were over there. And some people are at levels that it just beggars belief how humans could treat other humans that way.
Tony Burke there, the Minister for Home Affairs and the Minister for Immigration and Citizenship, Cybersecurity and the Arts, talking about the Australian women with links to Islamic State. He also talked about this discussion around definitions of anti-Semitism that universities are being encouraged to adopt. After our interview with him, we spoke with Julian Lisa, the Shadow Minister for Education, also the Shadow Minister for Indigenous Australians. He's a Jewish Australian who has been outspoken on a number of issues around anti-Semitism. And Sally asked him today if he supports today's changes for universities.
Well, look, this is something that we called for back in December last year. We called combating anti-Semitism to be a provider condition for universities. The minister in March indicated he would be doing something on this. We obviously want to see the detail, but I heard you put the question to Tony Burke. Has the government done the right thing by not mandating a definition of anti-Semitism? And can I say the answer is categorically no. This is another instance where we will have to drag the government kicking and screaming because the universities have to be dragged kicking and screaming again to do the right thing. The Special Envoy commissioned Greg Craven, a former Vice Chancellor, to look at the extent to which universities had adopted any definition of anti-Semitism at all. He found that not one single university in this country had adopted any definition. The universities said, oh, we don't like IRA, we'll adopt our own definition, and yet they'd had more than a year and failed to do so. 15 people were murdered in cold blood on our most famous beach because of their religion. The time to adopt IRA is now, and I'm calling on the minister to mandate the IRA definition.
That definition includes 11 examples of anti-Semitism in public life. One of those is, quote, drawing comparisons of contemporary Israeli policy to the Nazis. Should universities prevent campus protesters from making those comparisons, in your view?
Unquestionably and absolutely. I think the time for the universities to say they won't use it is well past. The IRA definition says that criticism of Israel, similar to that levelled against any other country, cannot be regarded as anti-Semitic. There are lots of Jewish people in this country who criticise the state of Israel. But the idea that you can walk around your university campus and, you know, use Nazi iconography to describe Israel and to describe Jews is just wrong. And the fact that our vice-chancellors are so weak and spineless that they haven't been able to crack down on this shows how much we need this definition adopted.
Appearing before the Royal Commission last week, Gillian Siegel said there was a, quote, a common and pervasive perception in the Australian Jewish community that the coverage by public broadcasters of the Gaza conflict disproportionately gave voice to anti-Israel perspectives. The broadcasters have rejected this suggestion. What do you think?
Well, look, I'm the Shadow Minister for Education, and my big focus has been trying to get the universities to do better on dealing with anti-Semitism. But as a member of the Jewish community, I know there have been complaints about the public broadcasters and their reporting of Israel for years and years. Organisations like the Executive Council of Australian Jewry, the peak body of the community in this country, have kept lots of documentary evidence on those matters. I think the public broadcasters have to take them seriously.
What do you mean?
Well, I think the public broadcasters actually have to be prepared to address systemic bias against Israel in their reporting, and I think they need to subject themselves to greater transparency mechanisms as outlined by the envoy.
What do you mean, greater transparency mechanisms?
Well, they're matters that the envoy has been putting forward, and these will be ultimately matters that the Royal Commission will determine. As I say, I'm not the Shadow Minister for Communications, but as a member of the Jewish community, you know, I know the community has raised these issues again and again, long before the Royal Commission, about unfair reporting about what's happening in the Middle East.
Should universities direct campus protesters to refrain from any criticism of Israel that might be regarded as quite a double standard?
Yes, you know, you want people to make criticisms of Israel as they'd make of America or New Zealand or Britain or any other country, but where they apply a standard that they wouldn't apply to the criticism of other countries to Israel, then that is regarded as anti-Semitic. Some of the other matters in those definitions include accusing Jews as a people of inventing or exaggerating the Holocaust, holding Jews collectively responsible for the actions of the state of Israel, accusing Jews of being more loyal to Israel than to Australia. This is something that, you know, my family have been in this country since the 1840s, and regularly on my social media, I'm accused of being a traitor and a Mossad agent. I mean, I love this country. I'm a public figure. You cop some of this rubbish. But this is the experience of ordinary Jewish people on university campuses, and it has to stop. We're sick of it, and I think this week at the Royal Commission, this is the week where the vice-chancellors have to own up for their failures here, for their failures in allowing those encampments to persist and saying that that's just the price Jews have to pay for free speech, for allowing organisations like Hizbut Tahrir to run their ruler over their security arrangements, for failing to provide a safe environment for Jewish staff and Jewish students and allowing a culture of fear to take place. These issues remain on our campuses today, as people will hear from evidence given at the Royal Commission this week.
Is criticism of the actions of Israel's military in Gaza, the humanitarian situation in Gaza, concerns around specific incidents where civilians have been killed and the civilian toll more directly, is it anti-Semitic to raise significant concerns about those issues?
Of course it's not. And when you're looking at the conduct of the war, you can ask questions about the proportionality of the conduct of the IDF. You can ask questions about, you can criticise the way in which the war's been conducted, the civilian casualties. You can criticise a whole range of different measures in terms of the actions of the Netanyahu government. And as I say, there are many Jewish people in this country who do those things. That is not anti-Semitic.
Julian Lisa there, the Shadow Minister for Education, also the Shadow Minister for Indigenous Australians. He was speaking to Sally Sarah on Radio National Breakfast. Well, as we often tend to do, we're going to bring Tom Crowley back in to tie those interviews together and give us a sense of how it's going to play out across the week.
You heard Tony Burke say that the government has adopted the IRA definition and that he finds it appropriate to use when it comes to character test style decisions on visas, and that some of the actions that are stepped out here, such as drawing links between Israel and Nazism or the Holocaust, that he finds to be an appropriate part of a definition to use, and he's saying that he's used that himself in coming up with a definition of anti-Semitism. But the bit that Julian Lisa goes to there about double standards, that's the phrase that the IRA definition uses, and that criticism can be directed at Israel per this definition, but should not be the kind of criticism that would not be directed at other countries. He gives the example of the United States or New Zealand. That's not specifically defined as such in what is not meant to be a legally binding definition to begin with, but it does leave some ambiguity and a question that is a lively one on campus about where is the line that universities should draw between what is acceptable for people to say in protests on campus and then what crosses the line into what the university won't accept and that threatens the safety of Jewish students. The government was asked by Gillian Siegel and is being asked by Julian Lisa to come down specifically in favour of the IRA definition and to tell the universities how they should define it, but it hasn't done so here. I think it's a broader pattern that kind of goes to the public broadcasters as well, and the way that Tony Burke talks about Gillian Siegel as being independent from government. The government has said that it's adopted her report in full, but it hasn't specifically committed, for instance, some of the actions about external supervision on the public broadcasters. And here again on universities, it hasn't gone as far as she would have liked in her report, hoping, I think, to be able to maybe swerve these more contentious elements and leave them to the universities. Julian Lees are making it clear he doesn't think that's good enough and he'll continue to prosecute that.
And that was Tom Crowley there. So, more coverage on this story over the next few days. Well, anti-Semitism won't be the only thing on the agenda this week. Artificial intelligence will be as well. Prime Minister Anthony Albanese will outline his vision of Australia's future with AI in a landmark speech on Wednesday. AI companies have been lobbying the government for carve-outs from national copyright laws regarding text and data mining in exchange for billions of dollars in investments in Australia's data centre industry. But Artists and authors and musicians are all sounding the alarm. They're calling for urgent protections for their intellectual property. And one of the most outspoken ones is ARIA-nominated musician Holly Rankin. You might know her by her stage name, Jack River. She told Sally what the current situation was, how people can legally use music like hers in Australia via AI platforms.
In Australia, if someone wants to use your content to train on AI, they have to ask for permission. So it's basic copyright law. If someone wants to use your content, they need to ask for permission and they need to pay. And right now we have that right, but the government is under pressure to potentially remove it. So there are many tools around the world that can understand how an AI is trained on your content, but the best case is actually when the AI company licenses the content in the first place. So there are hundreds of licenses happening all around the world where the companies actually ask the rights holder for permission, and that's done through large organisational and company deals. And that's the best case, and that's, I think, where we will get to as this issue moves forward.
As you're mentioning, the AI companies want a text and data mining exemption, a carve-out here. What do you think it would mean for the arts in Australia?
Well, it would be absolutely devastating, and not only for artists in Australia and creators in Australia, but all around the world, to put a text and data mining exception in our Copyright Act. It would make it legal for these technology companies to train not just only on Australian content, but the entire world's content. So models like Claude and ChatGPT are built on billions of pieces of scraped data. It's the matter of over 200 court cases around the world. But if we weakened copyright law here in Australia, it would actually legalise it. So they'd be able to train on content without permission. Australians would lose their right to negotiate their own value with these companies.
Last week, the number one song on some Australian charts caused controversy because it was made using AI-assisted technology. Let's have a listen. It's called Like a Prayer from Josh Foas. The fact that this song has managed to climb the charts, does that show that listeners are okay with hearing this type of music?
Look, I think it's too early to say. I think listeners and music companies and platforms all around the world are trying to figure this out. The data says that, you know, people do prefer human kind of created music. When we are talking about something like a text and data mining exception, it would actually remove our right completely to negotiate our value with these companies and let them mine this content for free. So we wouldn't even be able to have the conversation about whether it's valuable or not, or whether listeners like it or not. It would be that technology companies can just take the content without permission in the first place.
Holly, the government has previously rejected claims that it's considering a weakening of copyright protections when it comes to artificial intelligence. So you've been in Canberra lobbying politicians. Have you been given any assurances?
The government has reassured us many times that they are not considering a text and data mining exception. And we know the Albanese government are huge champions of Australian music and Australian artists. But we know they're under a great deal of pressure from companies like Anthropic and Amazon. We know Anthropic, for instance, is a four-year-old company on the eve of its IPO later in the year. It's pressuring the government to try and get a sweet deal. We do know that there is a lot of pressure incoming, but we have had very confident assurances from Minister Burke in particular, who we know is a huge champion of the arts. You know, one song, for instance, can cost anywhere between $3,000 to up to $15,000 to create. It's blood, sweat and tears. It's your experience. It's your life. And along the way, we pay musicians, we pay engineers and producers, and it's not just the song that we create, but we create, you know, movements and economies with our songs. We should remember that this extends to live music and tourism, and it's not just artists we're talking about. It's journalists, it's filmmakers, it's absolutely any Australian that creates anything. So these companies are Anthropic and OpenAI, Microsoft, Google. They've trained their AI on billions of pieces of scraped data. So just a few weeks ago, The Atlantic actually released a tool where artists could see whether their music had been used to train their models or not. And hundreds, if not thousands, of Australian artists got to see that these models had been trained illegally on their content. So it's really devastating and disappointing. And the last thing we should do is legalise it.
And that is ARIA-nominated musician Holly Rankin, who performs under the stage name Jack River, like the story with anti-Semitism. I'm sure this is one we're going to be covering later in the week when the Prime Minister delivers that speech. Well, thank you so much for listening to the first Breakfast Wrap episode for the week. It was produced by Shannon Schubert. All of those interviews from Sally Sara, produced by the Radio National Breakfast team. I'm Lucas Adam-Dundon. We'll be back in your ears tomorrow.